Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to My Seven Wonders, being recorded in front of a special audience here at the Leicester Square Theatre in London's glittering West End. So we're doing this on one of the hottest days of the year. So one of the wonders of the world, I think we should nominate as air conditioning. But that may crop up. So here we are in a vibrant, diverse area where tourists in Leicester Square rub shoulders with the tourists in Chinatown and also bump into the tourists making their way to Piccadilly Circus. There's all sorts here. But in ancient times, hanging gardens, great pyramids, and other superstructures were celebrated as wonders of the world. And like days of the week and deadly sins, there were always seven of them. But what are the seven wonders you would put on your personal list? That's the question I asked my guests in this podcast and on stage here today. And the guest I'm asking today is the satirist, comedian, writer, and actress, Rosie Holt. Rosie Holt. So now, I called you a satirist because you've had a big success in the last few years, maybe over lockdown in particularly, and later, with making little films, little videos, yeah. Little performances, which kind of fool people into thinking you are a
Tory MP.
And you record that and put it out, so half the people think you're for real, and other people think you're very, very funny. And yeah. I suppose eventually they'll all get together and it'll all be all right.
Yeah, and fight.
So did this come as a shock to you that you got going down in this line? Because you trained as an actress,
yeah.
and you were ready to perform in other people's plays.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. I mean, I've been doing stand-up for quite a few years when everything exploded online. But it was very strange because it happened during lockdown where we weren't seeing anyone. So it was a weird thing of getting sort of thousands of comments and anger. But also not seeing people day to day apart from my parents.
Yes. Well, I don't know when you say with that meaningful word and what your parents are like.
They're very nice.
Yes, of course they are. But yeah. But in doing this, you're often playing the sort of loyalists of backing up the government line.
Yeah.
And trying to explain away why there were parties or why this policy might or might not work.
Yes. I became really fascinated, particularly with Boris Johnson's government, of ministers being wheeled out on TV and excusing the inexcusable.
Yes.
And I thought it was just so funny. And it made me angry. So really, sometimes people ask me who the character was based on, and it wasn't really. It was an amalgamation of different MPs who would... Yeah. Defend Boris Johnson.
So if we had somebody, I mean, I'm not saying you've got to be tied down to that sort of Nadine Dorries sort of person who I remained pretty much a loyalist until, maybe not quite now because she's lost her chance of going to the House of Lords. Yeah, I don't know if that's his fault or her fault or somebody else's fault.
It wasn't Boris's, that's what she says. So Nadine, I think, is such an extreme character in real life. I don't think you can really parody. Actually, I say that Suze Kempner does a really good job of parodying Nadine, but certainly I find her too extreme.
Yeah, but isn't that the problem with politics at the moment?
Yeah.
It is quite difficult to parody, not just in this country. I mean, we're having a coup in Russia that lasted up until about lunchtime, and then recouped. God knows what's happening in America. It looks like we're going to have you know, Trump v. Biden.
How old will they be then? God, terrible.
There's not many countries or aspects of politics that you can make a sort of subtle point anymore because they've taken the subtlety out of it, haven't they?
Yeah. Sometimes when there is a really extreme clip, people will send it to me and go, are you going to parody this? And I go, no, because it's already ridiculous.
Yes.
There's nothing to do.
Yeah. So we've touched on the fact you've been acting in plays, you're doing stand-up comedy. So that was interrupted, the things like going to the Edinburgh Festival. So you were back at the Edinburgh Festival last summer.
Yes.
Woman's Hour, was that the title?
Yeah.
So will you be going again in 2023?
I will.
Yes.
I've got a show called That's Politainment.
Yes.
And it's
That's Politainment.
That's Politainment. And it's about the weird trend of MPs going into entertainment and having their own shows or reality TV and things like that.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So your characters, will they be going into reality?
Yeah, so my MP's trying to make it as a stand-up comedian.
Yes. I don't want to ask a tough question because it's a nice friendly thing, but I just put it to this. Yeah. This is an interesting thought. John Cleese always used to say that the best things you can play as a comedian are the things you would have been if you hadn't gone into comedy. So he had a good line in playing solicitors. So do you think that deep down there is a Tory MP inside you? I mean, you could have been a Conservative MP, but you're parodying that aspect of yourself.
What a ghastly thought. But you know, my great-grandfather was a Tory MP, so it is in my blood.
Oh, there you are, yes.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
So it may be in 20 years' time, you'll be minister for something and they'll be digging out these old films you've made and said, look what you did then, you dreadful.
I could go, surprise, I was Tory all along. And then run.
All right, well, having put that discommoding thought in your mind, let's go on to your first wonder. Mm-hmm. And you've sent in the list of things, so I've got the order in front of me, so it'll probably be easy if I just read them out and you then just justify them or explain them or expand on them. So your first one, pretty uncontroversial one, I suppose, in some ways, coffee. That is the wonder of the world.
It is the wonder. Well, this is a bit perverse, me choosing coffee, because I can't drink it.
Well, okay.
I love it. And I can't drink it. It's very boring, so I'll keep it short. I can't drink it because I suffer from very debilitating migraines. And I found out that when I cut out coffee, which my brother, who's a neurologist, was always telling me I should do, it had a huge difference and I wasn't being afflicted with them so much. But I miss it so much. And I drink decaf all the time. And it's a bit like, you know, this is a really silly analogy, but you know how you get those films where some man, he falls in love with this woman and then she dies or she marries someone else. And so he has to marry a nice woman. And he's sort of looking at his nice wife and he's like, oh, okay, well, she's all right. That's it, I suppose. But he's always like looking sadly out in the distance.
Oh, yeah.
I feel a bit like that with coffee.
Yes.
No, I'm stuck with decaf. I'm like, okay, I'll drink you.
Yeah.
But I don't want to.
But aren't you tormenting yourself by having decaf coffee? Why can't you find some other drink, you know, orange juice or beer or whiskey, just anything that isn't anything to do with coffee?
No, because you can't pretend with orange juice. With decaf, sometimes you can trick yourself and think that you... Do you know what's so sad? It's when I was drinking coffee, I remember this thought really clearly. I remember thinking... I know coffee isn't good for you, but I'm so glad I have it in my life.
Well, this is the...
now it's gone, Clive.
This, I would say this is was a surprising second thing you said when you said coffee. And the second thing was, but I don't or I can't drink it. I think you're the first one I think has selected something that they absolutely can't have and will make them ill if they even get near it.
I sometimes have one every like 5 months.
Yes.
And just treat myself and hope for the best. And the best is Turkish coffee. Have you guys had the Turkish coffee? Yeah, it's so good because it's really strong.
Yes.
And it's really strong and you can put it in sugar and it's tiny, but it's like coffee in its purest form.
Yes.
It's wonderful. What a wonderful invention that I can't use.
Well, You mentioned having decaffeinated coffee, and it's a similar thing with beer with no alcohol in it.
Yes.
How long can you keep going with a drink that's had the thing that you really want to have in it before you forget or you work out that you're not getting the kick that you want from it?
No,
so the taste of coffee, I mean, is it still tasty after 10 years if you've had no caffeine hit from it? Does alcohol still taste, or beer still nice when you've not got any alcohol with it?
Yeah. I think it will always taste good.
Yes.
Or at least in my head. And that's what's important, isn't it? Yeah.
So which of the many forms of coffee we can now get do you particularly miss having?
I like, it depends how I'm feeling. It'd be an espresso.
Yes.
Or a flat white, which is quite a wanky coffee.
Well, they're the two opposite ends of the scale there.
Depends
I won't comment on the wankiness of any particular form. So I'm ready. I was ready with lots of bits and pieces of thing about the various coffees.
But what's the point? The various coffees. Yeah. I like talking about coffee. I think about it every day. Yeah.
Well, a thing I would query about coffee, the way it's done today, is that now in coffee shops, there's these huge machines.
Yes.
And sometimes people have fairly similar things in their own home. In order to make a cup of coffee, which is easily done in a jug with boiling water, and they have these things, and it takes five times as long as it needs to. It must cost...
No, not that it needs to take that long, because it's a process must be honoured.
Oh, I see. Yes. Yeah.
Because the best one is when you get the coffee beans and you throw it in a grinder.
Yes.
And then you do all that.
Yeah.
Then you've watched it grind. And then you leave it for ages before you push it down.
If I go to a fast food outlet, I want it to be fast, not 20 minutes while things are prepared from the basics.
No, see, I'm such a snob about coffee.
Yes.
I can't.
Is it just coffee?
Just go. It's just coffee. It's just coffee. I can't have a fast coffee.
No. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I thought of all your wonders, of your seven wonders, and coffee was the most straightforward, but it turns out to be quite convoluted. So you love it, but you can't have it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I think we better move on to the next wonder, though, which takes into a completely different area. Or I don't know. I'm not going to predict, but it's Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Now, so for those in the audience, either here or listening to the podcast, who are don't remember Evil Dead 1 or 2, or any of the other Evil Deads,
their movies, their films,
their films. What? Tell us about it and tell us why you like it.
So I adore Evil Dead 2. Evil Dead 1 was the original kind of Cabin in the Woods movie. And I'm terrible at dates, but I think it was in the 80s.
87, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, no, Evil Dead 2 was 87, yeah. And Evil Dead was 81.
81, that's it. Yeah. And, it was this group of kids, they go to this cabin in the woods and they awaken a demonic presence from reading a Book of the Dead. I think it's called The Book of the Dead or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Just a very realistic, true-to-life kind
of
movie.
Very realistic, true-to-life. And all hell breaks loose, literally. But Evil Dead 2 pretty much follows it. It's not really a sequel. They've gone, I think we could make that movie better.
Yeah.
So they've got the same star, Bruce Campbell, but instead he just goes to the cabin with his girlfriend and it gets the action very quickly. I mean, spoiler alert, the girlfriend dies in the first 5 minutes. And... It's such an inventive movie and it's much funnier. The second one, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's a bit more po-faced, where the second one is scary but really, really funny.
Yeah, so they're always intended to be funny horror, funny. Because there's always a certain amount of comedy in horror, isn't it? Because it's always slightly ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's a monster walking around or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But they've gone for full comedy in this, especially in Evil Dead 2.
Yes, apart from it's still scary and shocking, but also the physical comedy in it is amazing. There's this bit where Bruce Campbell, his character's called Ash, and his hand gets possessed. And so he's trying to, like, there's this whole thing where the hand is, like, grabbing his head and he's trying to, like, pull the hand away. And then he ends up having to saw his own hand off, and then the hand wanders off and he's trying to, like, catch the hand, and the hand goes into a wall and he's got a gun and he's trying to shoot the hand, and then he thinks he shoots it, and then this blood comes out of the wall, and he's like, ha, I got my hand. And then this like torrent of blood comes out and just full in his face. It's really good. It's so good. I think it's brilliant. It's such an inventive movie.
But 1981, yes. I mean, obviously you can watch films from any era, but that would be before your time, wouldn't it?
Thank you, yeah. Yes.
And 87 even. So where did you come across these movies? And I know there are further ones on, is it Army of Darkness, Evil
yes.
Dead? 2013.
Yeah.
But where did you come in the later sequence and work your way backwards?
No. Evil Dead 2 was the first one I saw. And it was when I was a teenager. And Film 4 had just been released. And Film 4 had these sort of sister channels. And it was Film 4 Extreme. And it would play sort of video nasties from the 70s and 80s. And I wasn't a very popular kid, so I spent a lot of time watching horror movies instead.
Was that the time when Channel 4 put a little yellow triangle on things which are unsuitable?
Yes, so that and you had Mark Kermode would like come on and he'd go, this film was banned when it came out, and it was really exciting. You were like, oh, what monstrosity am I going to see today?
Yes.
It's great.
So this is when you're growing up. Mm. Were you already thinking about going into comedy at that stage, or was that did you have other plans in mind?
I did want to be an actor. Mm. But no, I hadn't thought of comedy, and I certainly wasn't watching those films thinking I could do this. I just thought it was so inventive, and I love those horror movies like Basket Case and various sort of movies at that time. I don't like horror movies so much now because it's sort of CGI and what I liked about those movies is you could really see the care that had gone into it. Mm. You know, when they'd make the demons, you could see that they'd kind of, someone spent ages doing plasticine and all sorts.
Is that a possessed hand? It was proper acting.
It's amazing.
It was probably based on Rod Hull and Emu, really. But that was,
Yeah. I think it's a real sort of craftsmanship. It's brilliant. I think it's great.
So something like Marvel movies now, I know they're not horror movies, but they can do anything with CGI and computer graphics and all sorts of things. And so that for you has lost the charm of
It's, you know, it's I like a Marvel movie, but it's not so fun. I think it's funner when you can kind of see the new workings of something.
So were you inspired by that sort of movie to say, I could do that. I could be the girlfriend who has to scream for 3 minutes while his hand rummages around the tent and the cupboard.
Yeah, that's the problem with those films. The girls always they don't have the best time in those films.
They either die early or they get
sexually assaulted by something weird. That's what usually happens, like sexually assaulted by a reanimator. It's a bodiless head. You know, just like, you're like, oh, great, here we go. So you're watching every film, and especially like me, like them, and then you'll think, oh, wait, here's the weird sexual assault scene, and that's not so great.
Well, you're the one who selected this. It's a wonder of the world.
Yeah. It's not perfect. But in Evil Dead 2, there isn't any weird sexual assault. There is an Evil Dead 1. Just warning anyone who's thinking I'm definitely going to watch Evil Dead box set now.
So you went to Lambda, which is a top drama school. Do they have a course in acting in horror movies or preparing you for getting those sort of roles, or are they still sword fighting and
being
like a tree?
We were a tree. Hmm. I was fire. <That's> an element. We had an amazing teacher, very scary teacher who kind of did physical comedy and which I think especially Evil Dead there's a lot of physical comedy in it, and there was a film course where we could make our own films. And I don't think I ever made a horror movie with it. I think I kept it more simple. It's more a kitchen sink drama.
But were your ambitions enlivened to think I'd like to be on stage, but I'd also like to be in movies, which, you know, there are movies made in this country, but obviously nothing like as many as they are in America.
Yeah. No, I loved the idea of being in movies. Mm. But it didn't happen yet.
No. But you were in a play just before the pandemic hit. So what happened about that? Where was that going?
So that was going to go around America for 6 months.
Yeah.
And that was, it was a parody of Netflix's The Crown. And it was me and one other actor, Brendan Murphy. He's very funny. And we were playing all the parts.
All right.
And
so who were you playing?
I played the Queen, obviously. I played a corgi. I played Prince Charles Princess Margaret.
Yes. Who was the hardest to play out of all of those?
The corgi.
The corgi, yeah.
The corgi was quite hard.
You had to find your inner dog.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it was a really funny show. We did it in London and it got wonderful reviews. So, yeah, we were about to do this amazing tour. And then it happened, we locked down as a country the week we were due to start rehearsals. And I'd been doing a day job on and off and I just left it. Because I was about to start and I was on my way to my leaving party and my agent called and he said, look, I don't know what your day job situation is, but hold on to it because the country's going locked down. And I said, but I'm going to my leaving party. Yeah. So I got there and they got me these things, like they got me they got me a framed thing saying love to travel.
Yeah.
And all these things that I couldn't do. And I remember getting really drunk and going, can I have my job back? Yeah. And they were like, no.
So what was the job you had?
Oh, well, I was an estate agent and I was terrible at it. That's probably why they didn't want me back.
No, you see, you're in it within you. There's a conservative MP and an estate agent.
Oh, do you know what? One time this somebody on Twitter found out that I used to be an estate agent. He'd obviously gone digging and he tweeted, Rosie Holt is a phony. She's just a bit less right-wing than her characters and she used to be an estate agent. I thought, oh, they found me out. Not all estate agents are bad. Someone groaned. They're not all bad.
I don't think they're bad, but that's a long time since I've had any dealings with an estate agent.
To be honest, I didn't understand what was going on during that job.
No.
It was great, but...
You take people, you turn up 10 minutes late for when they come to look at the house.
I once tell them that
somebody else has made a bigger offer.
Yeah, it's really hard. Well, I once... I was doing some viewings and there was a guy outside the house and I said, oh, do you want to see the house? And he went, okay. So we went around the house and I sort of showed him and then he went off and then I got a call and this guy said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm late for the meeting. Showing around the house. I just showed a complete stranger around the house. He obviously thought, why not?
Yeah, but if he turned out as somebody really fell in love with the house and put in an offer, you'd have done your job really well.
Yeah.
But I'm so worried about this. So you had that sort of big break of a show and COVID coming. Had you closed your mind to this and thought, oh, I don't think this pandemic's really going to kick off?
It was, it was really crazy. And, it was a bit devastating because I was so looking forward to doing that job and it did feel like a big break. It was the first time the kind of longest acting job I'd got. So I sort of quickly went back to my parents who live in the country and did think, oh my God, what am I? I kind of felt like everything was all over because the problem as well with acting is it's... You kind of get an opportunity. You might not get a decent one in ages. Yeah. So, yeah.
And if you're doing stage acting, you do need there to be an auditorium.
You do need there to
and
be
people
an audience.
Have to be prepared to risk death by coming to see you.
But I'm also aware, sort of saying this, that it's a bit silly when, of course, everyone's facing much bigger problems.
Well, but everyone faced different problems. Some are more... But in the entertainment industry, there was a complete cutoff of the work going on at all, and in many people's cases, income coming at all, which is a blow. It's not the same as your partner dying or your parents or your children falling ill, but it's still an economic blow.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So is that when you started making films and putting them out on, I don't know, Twitter or YouTube or Instagram, whichever ones you chose to use?
So I started putting videos out about 2 months into the pandemic when the Black Lives Matter protests kicked off. And what happened was Sadiq Khan had tweeted that they were going to remove a statue in London because of its links with slavery. And I was reading the comments underneath from very angry people. And they were writing things like, you're ruining history and you're taking away democracy. And they were so hysterical. I thought, oh, wouldn't it be funny to do a character where I follow these thoughts through to their logical conclusion?
Right.
So I put a video out of this woman sort of going, it's terrible what they're doing. They're erasing history just like Stalin did, who incidentally I have a statue of in my garden. And people got very angry and people started. And I, at the time I had about sort of 2,000-3,000 followers. It went crazy very quickly.
Yeah.
And there was lots of people going, how dare you have a statue of Stalin in your garden? Yeah. Take it down.
So the key to the success of this going viral, or whatever, however you describe it, was to have enough people who didn't see that it was a joke.
It's terrible, isn't it?
And were actually annoyed by it.
Definition of fake news.
Well, it's sort of, in a way, it's an interesting way to do it. That there's enough people going, ha, 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 they're enjoying it. But the other people, there's more clicks for people who say, this is an awful person. Where is this statue?
Yeah. Why?
But I suppose the clue there would be somebody like that wouldn't have a statue of Stalin, of all people. But there it is.
It was very silly. It's funny because I'd post things and you'd think that people would realise certain lines. You think, surely people are going to know that that's not real. So yeah. I had another one during the pandemic, you had the sort of rise of anti-maskers. Yeah. And there was this woman, she posted this very earnest video where she was like, I've just gone into Tesco's and I didn't wear my mask and they looked at me like I was scum. I have never felt so upset in all my life. And so I posted one and I said, I've just gone into Tesco's without my mask. They were circling me shouting, burn the witch, burn the witch. And someone came round and they threw a bell round my neck, presumably to warn people in the frozen food aisle I was coming. And I thought that would be quite obvious that was a joke. People were so angry.
Well, that's the way to do it. We were talking about Evil Dead 2 there. I don't know how we got onto that. But yeah, one further question arising out of that. So that show, that play, that performance, the two of you were going to do, I don't know if the interest in the royal family has waned so much that you can't do it, but you could revive that show if you had the time and the inclination to do it.
So actually, it did come back in a much smaller tour, kind of a year ago, but I couldn't do it. I had too many other things going on.
So they got a real corgi in instead.
They got a real corgi in. Yeah. He was great as playing the Queen.
So, but did somebody else do it? Or all right. So these chances come and go for everybody. But if there's another Evil Dead to come along, you'd be happy to be in that as well.
Well, there was one out recently, which I haven't seen yet.
All right. Is Bruce Campbell still doing? Because he's made a sort of career out of Evil Dead.
Yeah, there's an Evil Dead TV series, which is he's great in that.
Yes,
he's really good, Clive.
So he's got a whole career. Like it's like people who get a part in a soap opera, and they start off as the new schoolmaster, and they're still there when they're the great grandfather who's killed by an explosion of an aeroplane landing on the pub. You know, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I definitely think you should get a part in that at some point.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I I think we now might be on safer territory or relatable territory, but who knows? Maybe you're allergic to them, so you don't go near them. Cats is your next wonder of the world.
Yeah, I love cats.
Yeah, but you can be with them.
I can be with them.
You don't have
to have
decaffeinated cats, shaved cats.
Yes, just one of those horrible hairless cats.
Yes. Cats. So what is it about cats you like so much?
I really like... So, you know, I used to... I've always really liked animals, but I used to think I was a dog person.
Right.
But I think the problem with dogs...
You don't mean you identified as a dog.
No.
You were a dog person and you liked dogs.
Very angry about. Yes, I liked dogs. I never identified as one.
No.
I think...
Well, I'm a dog person, but I don't identify as a dog. Well, I was a boxer for a while, but that's... that's okay. Yeah, so cats, get back to your cats. Yeah.
Well, I think my issue with dogs, and not to insult dogs in any way, don't want to be controversial, is that they can be quite needy and they inspire a lot of guilt in me when I've looked after dogs, because if you don't walk them regularly, they're so sad.
Yes.
And they feel so sort of reliant on you, and it's a bit too much.
Yes, they're very social animals. They look to you. Yes,
they're sort of unrequitedly in love with you. I know you love dogs, but they are, their love is so extreme that it's too much.
Yes.
Well, what I like about cats is
they don't give a hoot.
They don't give a hoot, which is really nice.
Just open the tin of whiskers and get on with it.
Yeah, but they do a bit, which is what I like about them. I like how cats will like to be near you, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
Touch you, so they'll just sort of sit there looking content while you're sort of working away.
They don't want to admit that they need you.
Yes,
they want to sort of pretend. Oh, no, I don't care. Or if you open the door for them, they don't go out because they're I'm not waiting for you to open the door, and then you go to close it, and then they slip out. Whereas a dog, then they go out the door.
Now I think there's something really comforting about cats, and also I like, you know, in ancient Egypt they thought that cats were sort of magical.
Yes,
and I can see why people thought that. I think there is something a bit magical about cats.
Mm.
I think they're wonderful animals.
Well, both dogs and cats have been around humans
for a long time.
Thousands of years. Extraordinary thing. And so do you have a cat at the moment?
No.
All right.
No, I don't.
It's a wonder of the world. They're easily available. They're easy to look after. You mean a bit hypocritical. They're not really a wonder.
No, I'm warming up to it. No, because I live in a flat with four stairs and it was not...
Four stairs. Well, some of your athletic cats can get up four stairs. Four flights.
I don't think it would be very cat friendly. And I don't think my flatmate would like it. And also I don't think we're allowed cats in our flat.
Yes.
But apart from that...
So again, it's a little bit like the coffee thing. You're loving something you can't really have.
I think one day I will.
Yes.
I think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Did you know... As well, I said that really.
You had my attention.
Did you know this? Cats have there's a parasite that are attracted to cats.
Yes.
That they, if they go in you or how a parasites work, they make you love cats.
Wow.
Yeah. It's true. Isn't that crazy?
Where did you get this from?
The internet.
Somebody assured you.
Yeah.
So it's like a flea or a tapeworm.
Yeah, like a little cat-loving flea.
What a brilliant idea if there were such a thing.
But apparently, sort of one out of nine people have been infected with this parasite. Sometimes you don't know, and it alters the chemicals in your brain.
Yes.
And one of the things it does is it makes you love cats. It's carried in cat fur. It comes out in cat poo. So don't run around with that.
This parasite doesn't make you like cat poo as well, does it? Because
that'd be terrible, wouldn't it?
Yes.
And you go, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
It was a parasite. That's why I'm eating it. Yeah.
No. So anyway, cats you love. Have you ever had a cat then?
No, I've never had a cat.
You've never had a cat.
No.
You don't drink coffee. You've never had a cat. You're living a theoretical world,
parallel universe. About me.
Yeah, evil dead. You've never seen some dead person come alive.
No, it's time.
All right, cats. Any more you want to say about cats? I mean, I tend towards dogs, I'm afraid, but I don't want to. You know, there doesn't have to be a battle over these things. But dogs are, you get lots of different types of dogs.
Well, also,
cats are much of a muchness, aren't they?
Well, no, they're not. much for muchness. No, yeah. I think
they're much the same size.
Much of a muchness. Also, the thing is with dogs is you can kind of, well, the good thing about dogs is you can kind of work out what dog, depending on what breed it is, you can tell sort of what personality it's going to have a bit.
Yes, yes.
Cats, it's a bit Russian roulette on what kind of cat you're going to get.
Sure.
Sometimes they can be an angry cat.
Yeah.
Or one that sort of puts its bum in your face the whole time. You don't know.
Now, what about cats, other cats? You're talking, we're talking about domesticated cats.
Yeah, like domesticated cats.
But does your love extend to, or your admiration for lions and tigers?
I think they're very nice. I probably wouldn't pet one.
But
I'd be scared.
Would you go on a safari to go and look at a lion in Africa?
Yes. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do it. Yeah.
All right, I'm not really offering. I just wonder trying to explore
you. You can pay for me to go on a safari.
Well, right, yeah. Jolly. Well, you'd enjoy it. I mean, the safari, definitely. let's move on to your next wonder, which is the National Trust.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a wonder of the world.
I think it is.
Yes, okay.
Yes, I think it is. I think we're really lucky with the National Trust. I just love how where there are so many amazing places in Britain that I'm going all over the place here, but I grew up in Somerset and we used to go to Stourhead the whole time.
Right.
Which was these absolutely beautiful gardens, and they had sort of lakes and grottos, and they were just extraordinary. And I love how the National Trust, if you're anywhere around Britain, you kind of look up somewhere in the National Trust and you can go there, and it's so sort of magical and beautiful. And I went to Ham House recently, a week or so ago. I just like that I like that it's always near.
Yes.
You can find it and it's somewhere to go, which is beautifully preserved and kept, and it's just kind of peaceful. And I don't know, I'm being a bit incoherent about it.
No, not really. It's things like stately homes from what used to be stately homes were bought up when they were falling into disrepair or people couldn't manage them anymore. And there's an argument to say that they're in their best state now than they ever were, because once upon a time, a stately home might be used for a few weekends by grandees who might have a few people down. The rest of the time, they sort of imagined there'd be people walking down those walks, or that people would be sitting in those chairs. But now that happens the whole time. And all you have to do is to join the National Trust and perhaps buy a tea or a lunch or something in the cafe and a tea towel. Maybe it's the tea towels that attract you as well.
Oh, the tea towels. I love those tea towels.
They're beautiful. Is your home, which ought to be filled with cats, is it filled with tea towels?
Top to
fridge
bottom.
Magnets.
Yeah. Absolutely great.
Yeah.
National Trust fudge.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what about the sort of conservation of the countryside aspect?
I think that's
coastal paths and all that kind of thing. Is that
that really appeals to me. And I think why I chose the National Trust is I feel that it's had a rocky few years when you've got things like Restore Trust, which I don't know if people have heard of, but is this rather sinister group that thinks that the National Trust is going the wrong direction.
Yes.
And I
think it's a bit of an argument about what you put on the houses and how much of the history of how the money was made to buy the house, how much you want of that.
Telling people about slavery. It's that kind of thing. But I think there is something a bit more going on, because Restore Trust has got loads of money. And at one point they were canvassing people to try and put their people in charge of the National Trust. It's kind of a bit wrong, isn't it?
So it's sort of like a political argument going on, even with how to preserve a honeystone.
Yes, that's crazy. It has become a sort of slightly political battleground.
And does that worry you when on your evidently many visits
when
to
I'm
these
buying all my tea towels, think, what is going on here? No, I do think it's worrying. And Restore Trust has got it looks like it might have links to Tufton Street, which is quite sort of dodgy right-wing think tanks, which I find worrying. Also, the Daily Mail have attacked the National Trust and accused it of being woke, which is ridiculous. And I think so often with the case with some of these culture wars, I feel they are being stoked for a more nefarious purpose. So I think we've got to look after the National Trust and buy all those tea towels.
So you think you'd, would you like to be a sort of person in charge of it? I don't know.
No, I don't want to be in charge of anything.
No.
I'll just make my silly videos. Thank you.
All right. So I'm hoping it is the case that you do visit these properties. It's not something
no,
you
no,
just...
No, never means the National Trust.
You just hope to go there one day.
Yeah.
So there's a membership and everything, isn't it? So
there is. I'm not a member.
You're not a member. It's a wonder of the world. You're not even.
But I want the National Trust to know, if they're listening, that I will be.
My one, it's not really a complaint. Yeah. The one thing I would say that something could be sort of tidied up, because I'm associated with the Woodland Trust, which is all about restoring or preserving ancient woodland and restoring it and planting it. And naturally, the symbol of the Woodland Trust is, you know, oak leaves.
Yeah.
But the National Trust uses oak leaves as well. So there's just room for confusion there.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. Yes. I didn't know I'd chosen something.
So
that
I think it ought to be like a tea
trust.
Towel or something or a.
Everyone would know what it is.
Yes. But anyway, the National Trust. The next one is Cary Grant's performances. That's
I
one.
Love Cary Grant. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting where you put that, his performances. So
yes, not anything else about him.
Yeah.
Well, not his nice face.
Well, he's a good-looking man. I think he had quite a busy love life.
He had a busy love life. He had quite a traumatic upbringing. Yeah, he had all sorts of things.
Did he come from near
on.
You? Because you come from the west of England. He
yes.
came from there originally, didn't he?
Yeah, he was from Bristol.
He very much became American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's wonderful. I just... there's so many of his films. I've seen a lot. I mean, the thing is, he's been in loads of films.
Yes.
Because I thought I'd seen a lot. And then I had a look at the list and just there's like a couple of films a year.
Well, he was a studio actor for a long while. And but as you say, he was in some, you know, well, some good films and some less good ones. But
yeah.
I suppose... But they're all made before your time again. So this is the part of Hollywood history that you enjoy. I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't. But I don't think he's been in anything as striking as Evil Dead 2.
No, he's never been in Evil Dead 2.
So the one I would remember him mostly from was something like, you know, North by Northwest.
I think that was the first Cary Grant film I watched. And that obviously, that's a film that you can kind of revisit again and again and again.
Yeah.
It's so brilliant.
So it's got everything. It's got Hitchcock making it, him in it.
Yeah.
He's always
lovely suit.
He's very well turned out. Even when running through a cornfield looking for Theresa May, he was still still looking as sharp as anything from Mad Men or anything, you know. So so the comedy, he's quite a comic performance. But a realistic performance he would give, and an amiable performance usually.
Yes, and also his work with Alfred Hitchcock was great because he did some darker roles like Suspicion and Notorious. When I first saw Notorious, I fell in love with it. I thought it was wonderful.
Mm.
And in that, he's playing not playing a very nice person. I mean, he's a good person. I think he's a CIA agent, but he's quite sort of mean and mysterious, but it's such a sort of captivating performance. I think there is something, he's so charismatic on screen and he had amazing comic timing.
Yes.
And I think it was a shame because, so with Suspicion, it's, for those who haven't seen it, it's he plays this sort of playboy and this rather meek woman meets him, falls in love. And she's got loads of money and they marry and she begins to suspect that he's trying to kill her. And even though he's sort of really sort of sweet and lovely, but things keep happening. Like his friend sort of dies in mysterious circumstances. He's a really bad gambler. And spoiler, I'm sorry, I'm going to spoil it. But if you haven't seen it by now, you should have. It's made a long time ago. But at the end, it turns out, she just misunderstood. And it was because the original ending, he was a killer. And the studio said, no, you can't do that. You can't have Cary Grant being a wife killer. That's awful.
Yeah.
You have to change it. So Alfred Hitchcock sort of instead had this rather lame ending of him going, no, I was trying to kill myself. I was sad. And she's like, oh, darling.
Yeah.
Such a fool.
Yeah. So is that one of those ones where for the actor, it doesn't really matter what the ending is. You're just playing the part. of somebody who looks good on the surface but is doing dodgy things. And,
yeah.
and however it resolves at the end, you could film two endings and decide.
I think the best performances. Well, the best characters when it's sort of the setup of is my wife trying to kill me, is where it's kind of they're believably charming and you they're not yes. sort of winking at the camera, and he doesn't do that. He just plays it as a sort of charming rogue who's got a bit of an edge.
Yes. So you like his performance. Is it, yes. as an actor yourself? Is there anything you would draw from that you would perform like him? Or is it just a sort of admiration or an attraction to...
Well, I think you're right in what you were saying about how he's always kind of realistic, like in North by Northwest.
Yes.
It's such a funny performance, but it's always in the realms of believability.
Yeah. So and that takes it back to your little films as well.
My little films.
They're not Hollywood films yet.
Yes.
But yes. Yeah, but in those, you're straight faced. You're poker faced. You're not saying ha 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 ha. You're just performing as the MP or whichever character you're adopting. Yeah.
Yeah, completely.
So you like that aspect.
I like that aspect of it.
So so you are the female Cary Grant. Have we got there?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's Cary Grant's performances. This is an increasingly odder and odder list now I look at them, of wonders of the world. Did you do this late at night? No, not yet. So your next wonder is an interesting one. Philip Glass.
Yes.
So this is now his first real mention of music, I suppose, in this list of things. But why Philip Glass? What about his... He's a composer, obviously. But,
I adore his music. I hope you don't ask me to name any of his tracks because I can never remember any tracks from anybody. But I think his music is incredible. And as a rather cheat, I came through it. My dad adored Philip Glass, so he was always playing Philip Glass in the house.
Right.
And I think the music is so powerful and evocative and brilliant. And also... I'm sorry, I'm going to mention horror films again. Yeah. But there are certain films with, he's a great film composer, where I think he elevates certain films where what you remember is the soundtrack. So Candyman, which is a rather nasty 90s horror, has a Philip Glass soundtrack, and it just kind of elevates it to a whole new place. It's brilliant. I think.
Well, you say any of his tracks, but he's written a lot of different musical theatre, 14 symphonies, 12 concertos, certi, string quartets, chamber, and of course the film music, which has probably reached more people by doing that than anything.
That's your kind of entry level Philip Glass.
Well, I'm coming through the entrance with you, but
it's unfortunately, just don't ask me to name any of the tracks.
All right, but,
You
have listened to some of his music. Yes, then. I don't want to feel it's just from afar.
It's absolutely wonderful, and one day I'll listen to him. Yeah, no, I have, and I think he's brilliant.
Yeah,
yeah.
And is there a musical side to you as well? We know you're a comedian, you're a performer, you're a writer. You write, create your things. But how about music? Do you do that?
So I shouldn't say this because it's something I wanted buried, but when I first started, I first started doing stand-up about 7-8 years ago, I think.
Mm.
And when I started, just for the first year, I did it with a ukulele.
Oh, right.
Now, this is looked down upon in comedy circles. So I went on stage and I brought out my ukulele and I sung songs about men.
Yes.
Yeah.
And were men people you thought were pretty poor in their behaviour and things to be
all about
made
Cary
fun
Grant.
Of?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think old style comedians, you go back, decades. They often had either they often sang a song, or might or might not be a ukulele, you might play the violin, or it was just a way of sort of finishing off an act. But, but perhaps you did it more than that.
I probably did it too much. Some might argue
comic songs as well. So did you write the songs? Did you write the music?
Yeah.
Why the ukulele? Was that just a jolly
to learn? It's just a jolly instrument. I used to be able to play the piano, but I haven't played it for years.
Mm.
So I do have a bit of musical ability, but Yeah.
So what sort of songs did you sing about men, or were they delivered with a punchline at the end of every verse? What sort of songs were you doing?
I had a song called The Unsafe Sex Song.
All right.
Which was about the dangers of unsafe sex. It was witty and funny.
That sounds like a public information film rather than necessarily a comedy film.
That's what I like people to learn through my comedy. Yeah.
So what's happened? You did it for a year.
I did it for a year and then I think the shame caught up with me and I stopped. No, I think I started because I wanted to do stand-up but I was too afraid to just... It was a bit of a crutch to begin with. I thought, well, I've got a bit of musical ability. I can make a song. And that seemed less scary thing to do.
Mm.
And there are some amazing, amazing musical comedians. I was not one of them. And I think it got to the point after a year where I thought it feels limiting. And also the way, even before I started sort of doing political comedy, my stand-up would often be going through some weird, bizarre train of thought that would go on much too long.
Yeah.
You can't really do that with a song, or rather I couldn't. I just picked things that rhymed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, some people start as just doing music and then but they're little bits, or even Billy Connolly, I think, started as a musical performer, but the bits in between got longer and longer.
Yeah.
And I think Jerry Rafferty was doing the same sort of stuff, but he went more to the music and rather than the comedy. So that could have gone either way with you. You could have been singing, when I'm cleaning windows or something, if you'd stuck in that direction rather than the comedy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really glad I didn't go into music. I think it would have lasted very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you could be turned into another Philip Glass and be...
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yes. Put the effort in.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're going beyond our time. We've got one more wonder to put into this. Can you remember what your seventh wonder is?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Water, brackets, being in it.
Right.
Close brackets.
Okay. And you're not allergic to water, so you do go
into...
I've
never been in water. But one day.
Yeah. Well, water is a wonder of the world.
Water
because
is a wonder
it's
of
a
the
basis
world.
Of life.
Yes.
Not just human life, but all life. It's got very interesting... But you put it in just because you like, bathing in it, swimming in it, washing in it, being in it.
Great.
Yeah, showering.
Well,
I mean,
it's sad because one of the things I used to really love was swimming in the English Sea, and now it's a bit pooey.
Hmm.
So that's, I think that's awful, actually. But I do love a good bath, Clive.
Yes.
And actually, we were talking before about listening to podcasts, and often I will. Actually, I get very ambitious when I have a bath. So I run a bath and then I stack next to the bath, I sort of stack the book I'm reading and then a notepad because I think, what if I have some wonderful creative idea I have to write down? And then I put some music and then candles and it's an event just me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds exciting. So
it's really exciting.
If you have an idea in a bath, then you can sometimes sort of write it in the, if it's steamed up on the tiles or the window, you can write on there and hope you can recover that.
And then
that.
It's like Kubla Khan.
Yes.
When it goes, you go, I've lost it.
You have to steam up the room again to see if you
get
the magic formula there or the idea or something. So water is in its, not quite its purest form, but in a very immediate form. It's just lying in a bath.
I love lying in a bath.
No, there's candles and everything.
But I also love swimming in. I do love swimming in the sea.
Yes.
I can think of moments in my life where I've been really stressed and, I can think of one particular moment where I'd gone on holiday and I was going through a really, really stressful, difficult period. And I remember the feeling of kind of going into the water and it was just wonderful and such a relief.
Mm.
And I don't know anything that does that in the same way.
Right. So
apart from Evil Dead 2.
Yeah. So swimming, perhaps. Do you swim every day? Do you swim in the... And I know you live in London. Do you dive into the Thames every day? Or is there a swimming pool around the corner?
No.
Do you come from Bath? Is that a psychological...
Yes.
Do you think that's psychologically why you're attracted to Bath? I mean, there isn't a place called Shower, so you couldn't test that out.
No.
But people wanted to go back there. But you like the... But is it the cleanliness aspect of it, or is it the warmth of it, or the all-embracing aspect of it?
I think it's the all-embracing aspect of it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we've definitely run out of time, Rosie. Now, of your seven wonders, the discipline of this program, I have to select the wonder of wonders.
Going to be Evil Dead 2.
Yeah. I'm not personally tempted to Evil Dead 2. All cats come to that, and I can't get over the National Trust problem with their symbolism. Do you think I'm going to go with Cary Grant's performances? Because I think he is a wonderful one. But anyway, thank you for nominating all your seven. Cary Grant in particular, thank you for sharing your seven wonders with us today. Rosie Holt. Thank you, Rosie.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this episode of My Seven Wonders, it would be wonderful if you could rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you found us. Thank you for listening.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.